Good morning and welcome to Overeaters Anonymous, a Vision for You Big Book Study. My name is Melanie C. and I'm a recovered compulsive overeater. Today is Tuesday, August 18th, 2020, and this is the 10 a.m. Eastern Time Big Book Study meeting. Today we are reading from the Big Book. We're in the chapter, The Doctor's Opinion, and we're on page XXIX. Fourth paragraph at the bottom of the page, you're going to see, I do not hold with those that believe, and then ends at the top of XXX with beyond their mental control. Today's readers are the 12 steps, Karen K, the 12 traditions, Margaret N, reading the text and support today is Kara L, Laura R, Leslie M, newcomer greeter, sponsor information for you, Elaine B, and then the announcements at the top of the hour is Robin P. The share ID numbers for this meeting's yesterday meeting, Monday, August 17th, 2020, the 10 a.m. meeting is 15170, 15,170. And then this morning we already had a meeting at 7 a.m. That share ID number is 15175. 15,175, and that would be for Tuesday, the 18th of August. The OA preamble. Overeaters Anonymous is a fellowship of individuals who, through shared experience, strength, and hope, are recovering from compulsive overeating. We welcome everyone who wants to stop eating compulsively. There are no dues or fees for members. We are self-supporting through our own contributions, neither soliciting nor accepting outside donations. OA is not affiliated with any public or private organization, political movement, ideology, or religious doctrine. We take no position on outside issues. Our primary purpose is to abstain from compulsive eating and compulsive food behaviors and to carry the message of recovery through the 12 steps of OA to those who still suffer. Our sole purpose, OA's fifth tradition states, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. At a Vision for You Big Book Study, our message is that people who suffer from compulsive overeating can recover through abstinence and the practice of the 12 steps and 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. I will now ask Karen Kay to please read the 12 Steps of Overeaters Anonymous.
Good morning. My name is Karen. I'm a recovered compulsive eater from sunny Syracuse, New York, and my credits don't transfer. The 12 Steps of Overeaters Anonymous. One, we admitted we were powerless over food, that our lives had become unmanageable. Two, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Three, made decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood him. Four, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Five, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. Six, were entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. Seven, humbly asked him to remove our shortcomings. Eight, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. Nine, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10, continue to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood him, praying only for the knowledge of his will for us and the power to carry that out. 12, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we try to carry this message to compulsive overeaters and to practice these principles in all our affairs. And thank you for allowing me to be of service. And with that, I will pass.
Thank you, Karen Kay. I will now ask Margaret N. to please read the 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous.
Good morning, everybody. I'm really grateful and happy to be here with everyone. 12 traditions. One, our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon OA unity. Two, for our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God as he may express himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. Three, the only requirement for OA membership is a desire to stop eating compulsively. 4. Each group should be autonomous except in matters affecting other groups or OA as a whole. 5. Each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. 6. An OA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the OA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. 7. Every OA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. 8. Overeaters Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. 9. OA, as such, ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10. Overeaters Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues, hence the OA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11. Our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, films, television, and other public media of communication. 12. Anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all these traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities. Thank you. I pass.
Thank you so much, Margaret Ann. That's great. Thank you. How our meeting works. Our meeting focuses on the directions for recovery described in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. We read a paragraph or two from the literature, then stop and share on what was read. Anyone can share, but we ask that you keep your sharing to the topic and literature we are discussing, and that you keep your share to approximately 3 minutes. Singleness of purpose reminds us to identify as compulsive overeaters only. Our absence requirement for moderators is 1 year, and for readers is 6 months. There is no abstinence requirement for sharing on topic. This meeting does request that your sharing be directly linked to what was read. We are sharing what the directions in the Big Book mean to us. To share, press star 1 to unmute, and once you are done sharing, let us know by saying pass, then press star 1 to remute your phone. In order to have a quiet meeting and a quiet recording, everyone's phone except the speaker should be muted. And I'd like to note here, this is a star 1 key function only, please, for the purpose of muting. All else could fail and often does. So thank you for following that consideration. Today we resume our study of the Big Book. We're in the Doctor's Opinion on page XXIX, 4th edition, and on the 4th paragraph, which starts with, I do not hold with those who believe, and ends at the top of page XXX with, beyond their mental control. I would like to ask Kara L. to please read and unpack that particular paragraph today for us, and then comment on what her experiences are with those directions, and then we'll open it up to the general audience here to make their comments as well. Good morning, Kara.
Good morning. Thank you, Melanie. My name is Kara L. I'm a recovered compulsive overeater from Long Beach, California. I do not hold with those who believe that alcoholism is entirely a problem of mental control. I have had many men who had, for example, worked a period of months on some problem or business deal which was to be settled on a certain date favorably to them. They took a drink a day or so prior to the date, and then the phenomenon craving at once became paramount to all other interest, so that the important appointment was not met. These men were not drinking to escape. They were drinking to overcome a craving beyond their mental control. Again, my name is Kara L., recovered compulsive overeater from Long Beach, California. We have just been studying some incredible, incredible literature over the last weeks, months, years. I say that every time I read from this book. It is not entirely a problem of mental control. You know, I don't know about you, but for me, I remember thinking, if I just found the right diet, because society told me if I just stopped eating, I would lose weight and everything would be fine. And once I was thin, everything would be fine, right? And so I never felt like I was enough because I could never be thin enough. I could never stay with a diet. And it didn't matter. I mean, I love here how my life wasn't bad, right? It wasn't bad. And I can't explain then why I would pick up and continue to eat, you know, because it is a problem beyond my mental control. And I ate for everything. Happiness, joy, sadness, frustration, fear. I ate over everything. And when I read these words, you know, it was like a weight had been lifted. Like it was a diagnosis I didn't know I needed. And when it came, and then there was a prescription in this book, you know, and what a relief. And I'm finding more and more as I continue to work these steps in everything, in every day in my life, how much a prescription is in this book, how there are so many things in my life that I believe are within my mental control that are not, and how I have to know that I have an abundant God that will take care of those. So today, you know, I ask my higher power to do for me what I cannot do for myself because it is beyond my mental control. If I could do it, I would have already done it. With that, I pass, and I look forward to hearing from my fellows about this paragraph. Thank you so much, everyone. Have a wonderful day.
Thank you, Kara L. Thank you so much. The lines now will be open for additional comments on that paragraph on page XXIX, fourth edition, in the doctor's opinion, fourth paragraph, please. That will be our focus of discussion today. If you give me your first name, the first initial of the last name, I can take that down. And although we do very much value all experience here, we would ask that you limit your share to every third day in order that others might have a chance to share their experience too. So if you shared on Friday and Monday, consider making your day for sharing tomorrow if you want to share that frequently. So for now, let's take your first name, the first initial of your last name.
Amanda N.
Rob.
Larry G.
A.
Rob G. Larry G. Evan. I got you, Amanda.
Toby A.
Toby A. Is that what you said? Okay.
Yes.
Michelle J.
Michelle J.
Daisy B.
Daisy B. Let's go with that lineup. I like that number. Amanda N., Roz G., Larry G., Evan U., Toby A., Michelle J., and Daisy B. Good morning, Amanda. All else, if you would press star one, please. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. Good morning, and thank you for your service. Thank you, everyone that's on the line. I'm grateful we're recovering in this program. And the timing of these shares from yesterday, today, the reading, is so pertinent for me. I have had, you know, just one of those kind of moments of more clarity, I guess, yesterday, that I really needed to surrender the desire to mentally control. And I can so easily delude myself into thinking that I'm turning things over to God and I'm still trying to control it with my mind and intellect. And I have to, you know, pray for and receive humility that my intellect is filtered through God, just the same way, you know, my food needs to be weighed and measured, but literally that, you know, my brain needs to be filtered through the steps, through God, so that it can be cleared of things that would not be useful to it, and particularly thinking that I know better than God in any certain situation. I have long, I'm studying the spirituality, but I've long wanted to also study psychology. But what I really have realized in the last couple of days is part of that is an extension of my obsession to think that I can someday somehow figure it out, or even further, that there's some pride and grandiosity in that, you know, I can make a significant contribution to the field of psychology and addiction recovery or that kind of thing. And I'm really coming to the point where that's not a professional path I'm going to, go towards. And there's so many recovering people, food addicts included, compulsive eaters included, that are in that profession and are incredible and wonderful. But I'm really seeing that my wanting to find an answer, wanting to figure it out, wanting to exert mental control, and just in a unwillingness to fully surrender that part of me has really helped keep me in a place where I was not fully allowing God's, power to influence my choices, decisions, and has led to a history of relapse. So very, very, very grateful for the message that this disease cannot be controlled by my intellect or my emotions. And I will pass. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Amanda N. Roz G., you're next, and then Larry G. will follow you.
Good morning, everybody. My name is Roz G., and I'm a recovered compulsive overeater in Palmdale, California. And I want to share a little anecdotal story that happened in my life, and that is, well, for the part it says, we have a certain date favorably to me. So my best friend got married in the very early 90s, very early. And, of course, I was in my disease. I had no clue about what was wrong with me. But I knew that I was her matron of honor, and I didn't want to look overweight in the picture. So I'm driving, by the way, maybe a little noise, but not much. Anyway, I think, okay, so I'm going to go on a coffee fast over the weekend so that I can lose a whole bunch of weight so that I'll look nice in the picture. So I read this guru's book about coffee fasting, and I start giving myself enemas with coffee and drinking tea and coffee. So I'm abusing a laxative was really what I'm doing. So, and the book says, don't do that. I mean, don't eat because your stomach is resting and you could do a lot of damage to yourself if you eat. So I want to look nice for the wedding, and I want to do this fasting so that I'll be okay. So my mind is telling me the food is not going to, it's going to make me fat, and I'm going to look bad in this picture. And so I do the fast, and then Sunday comes along, and my mom and sister come out, and they want to go to this really, mom and papa's hamburger joint in our town, and I go with them, and I take a French fry, and then next thing I know, I'm eating a double cheeseburger. And then today, luckily my friend got divorced, and I don't mean that. I mean that I shouldn't say that. Luckily, my friend was divorced, and the marriage didn't work out, and there's no more pictures. But to see the picture of myself in that wedding shot, I'm the most overweight one in the picture. And the smile on my face is phony. And of course I didn't meet the date, because the phenomenon of craving took over when I ate the French fry and then all of a sudden eating the double cheeseburger, because I can't control it. And thank God for this doctor's opinion that tells me what is wrong with me. I had no clue. And the way for me to keep remembering is to go over this with fuzzies. Okay, and thank you. I just keep going over it, over and over. Thank you. I pass.
Thank you, Roz G. Larry G., your 3 minutes is starting now, and then Evan U. will follow.
Good morning. My name is Larry G. I'm from Northern California. I suffered from the delusion that I had strong mental control. And the thing about that is I know now that it's an abnormality of the mind, because I would pursue that, and we'll somewhere in the big book, they'll say the gates of insanity. I really had a very narrow definition of what absent mean. And I thought that, you know, an occasional binge was okay. Because look at, you got a great life, Larry. Life is good. You're in good physical shape. But I'm really finding how warped my mind was and how my mind is healing. Now it's being defogged from excess food and compulsive food behaviors and alcoholic foods. You know, for example, my sponsor, I have never had a sponsor like this. I've got 39 years this month in AA, and I've never had a sponsor that has been kept my feet to the fire like the sponsor. I mean, there's almost on every call I want to fire the sponsor, although I didn't hire the sponsor. I want to fire in my mind. And I'm learning how I will go without eating, because I don't feel hungry. And what that does is sets up the next day. So I think I've got some kind of control over, well, if I just reduce the amount, it's going to be great in the day, reduce the amount at dinner. No, it doesn't work that way. And I'm finding out a lot of little subtleties about abstinence that I had never, ever considered before. Thank you for giving service. I pass.
Thank you so much, Larry G. Next up is Evan U, and then Evan, Toby A is going to follow you.
Hi, this is Evan U from California. Nice to be here with you all. Thank you for your service. Thank you for making this meeting happen so I can find some abstinence and some peace. Mental control. That for me is one of the most important things in the entire book, because it's so clear to me that food is just the tip of the iceberg. You know, food was not my problem. Food was my solution. And I can't control food with my mind because the food is a symptom of me trying to control me and trying to control my life. You know, my life is unmanageable by me, but I'm trying to manage it against all odds. And I do so with merciless and ruthless self-hatred. I mean, for me, compulsive overeating and hatred just walk hand in hand. And how much I've hated myself and tried to change myself and tried to change myself with food because of that self-hatred. And the reason mental control doesn't work, because I don't know what portion of all that is caused by the mind, but the mind is certainly, you know, it says in the book that the problem centers in our mind. And it's like, I'm trying to solve and fix my mind with my mind and my self-sufficiency and my self-will. I'm trying to make a good life based on this crazy, you know, Albert Einstein, you can't solve the problem from the level of the problem. But that's when I'm managing my life, that's what I'm trying to do. And what I'm really seeing as I'm going through my four step is I'm trying to manage and direct and solve my life and create a happy life from using self-hatred as my biggest tool and my guide. Talk about a recipe for disaster. You know, so food is so far the very last just tip of the iceberg. It's like if all of that stuff underneath it isn't solved, if all that stuff, if the entire that approach isn't solved, how can I and I can't fix that. How can I possibly control the food? It's just not possible. So I'm grateful that there is a way to address what's really wrong with me so that I don't have to try to use food as a faux solution. Thanks for letting me share. Great being here with you all.
Thank you very much, Evan. Toby A., you're up next for 3 minutes, and then Michelle J. will follow you.
Hi, my name's Toby A. I'm a compulsive overeater. This paragraph really hit me and reminded me of one of those aha moments that I had in Overeaters Anonymous when I had a sponsor I was talking to about, you know, about having had a slip, and I was like, why do I want this food? It's crazy. It's killing me. You know, and she said to me that it's not, for a compulsive overeater, it's not abnormal for me to crave the food. It's normal. That's what is normal because I have this disease. The normal thing is for me to overeat. The miracle is when I don't compulsively overeat. The miracle is when I'm working the steps and I don't compulsively overeat. And to stop saying, you know, why am I crazy? Why am I craving this food that I know is killing me? It's because I have a disease. That's totally normal for a compulsive overeater to be craving. The miracle, the recovery, is when I don't. And then more recently than that, I heard something that has actually really driven my own sponsoring. And I just started sponsoring somebody yesterday, and the first thing I said was, okay, you know, read the big book. I mean, read the doctor's opinion. First thing we're going to do, we're going to read the doctor's opinion. And because I heard that this is step zero, that before we can admit that we are powerless and our lives are unmanageable, we have to realize that this is a disease, and that this phenomenon of craving is something that's intrinsic into our alcoholic, our compulsive overeater brains. So anyway, that really hit me today, and I felt like I needed to share about it. And thank you for letting me share.
Thank you very much, Toby A. Michelle J., you're up next for 3 minutes, and then Daisy B. And then, folks, after these 6 minutes of sharing, I'm going to be able to open it up for additional shares if you want to get ready for that. The paragraph that we're looking at today to unpack is the doctor's opinion on page XXIX, the fourth paragraph, way down there at the bottom, starts with, I do not hold with those who believe. It ends at the top of XXX with beyond their mental control. But in the meantime, we'll listen to Michelle J. and then Daisy. Hi, Michelle.
Hey, Michelle J. here from Arkansas. Recovered today by the grace of God and recovering every day through the program, through the 12 steps, and listening to all of you. So any Hoosers, I was thinking this morning, cravings beyond our mental controls. Well, if I have kind of squelched those cravings by biologically getting myself cleaned up, I say, God, help me get cleaned up. What's going on there? And I think that these thoughts, these monkeys in my head, the cravings are these monkeys in my head. And I have to take them captive. And I'm thinking, okay, every day I get up and I'm asking for the ability, because I don't have any control. The cravings are there. But what's the actions that I can do to grab hold of those thoughts and turn them into positive things? And I started thinking about that, thinking, well, like when I'm going to walk into my kitchen, or if I'm going to go out to a restaurant with friends, maybe just, I don't know, anything, I think, okay, if I just walk in without a plan, then it's like a banquet. My head goes into banquet mode. Those cravings are like off the scale. So I have a plan, and I stay within that plan. I pre-have that plan, and that plan helps take those thoughts, those cravings captive. And then I have these other thoughts, thoughts of failure, thoughts of hopelessness and things like that. Well, those are cravings that need to be cured. Well, if I have these little words all through my house, things that I see as an action, I stop and I read them, and it can take those cravings for something more, for something better, for something of ease. One I have in front of me right now is, content, a state of heart in which you would be at peace if God gave you nothing more than what he already has. Wow. And it just kind of triggers me. It's an action I do to take my thoughts captive to also take away those cravings. Something else would be outreach for me. It, by calling people and working with people and outreaching with people, I have these cravings for value, okay? They're real under there. But my value comes when I'm working with others and I get distracted from my weirdness inside, my monkeys in my head that want to tell me otherwise, that I'm valueless and purposeless. Another one that came in recently was these cravings to not exercise. I want to exercise, okay? But my brain says, oh, it's too hot outside, or I'm tired, or I hurt, or just whatever. And I'm changing those things. I'm changing my thoughts. And I'm thinking, when I was young, I used to love to roller skate, but I can't do that now. But, you know, no more time is here. But just capture those thoughts and turn them into positive actions by the grace of God. In Christ's name, amen. And I'll pass with that.
Next up is Daisy B for 3 minutes, and then the lines will be open again for additional shares. Hey, Daisy.
Hi, Melanie. Thanks so much. This is Daisy B from Boise, Idaho. So much of my disease was rooted in this, you know, mental obsession and seeking escape, but it wasn't all of it. And this craving was real and it was there. And I just think about how many parties and celebrations and gatherings I would show up to, so excited, you know, sunny day, all my friends there, having a great time. And I'd casually stroll over to the dessert table and have that first bite. And it was like day ruined, you know, I am preoccupied. I don't care about anything else except that food. And that, to me, that was the craving. And it wasn't even seeking escape at those times. It was just like, you know, I'm going to eat like everybody else. I'm going to have a brownie here. And it was just done. And then later on in my disease, you know, I remember it got so, you know, so dark and progressed so quickly that I got to the point where literally there was nothing else I wanted to do in the world except stop eating. And I remember sitting on the floor of my kitchen just sobbing, you know, Googling help, sobbing and stuffing my face with anything I could find, food that didn't taste good, food that was, you know, frozen, whatever it was, just gross. And I just could not stop. And I would finally, you know, I heard about OA and I would get myself to a meeting, binging all the way, sit through for an hour, sobbing the entire time, leave and immediately go to the grocery store. And that for me, you know, that was the craving. It wasn't the mental obsession at that point. I didn't want to do it, but I could not stop. Because the pain of eating and of not eating, I think as Harlan said, was just too much for me. And yeah, I had to keep going. So thank you everybody for allowing me to share. And with that, I pass.
Thank you so much, Daisy. That's Daisy B. The lines are now open for additional comments on that paragraph, page XXIX, paragraph 4. If you give me your first name, the first initial of your last name. But wait just one second. Reva, I want to be sure that folks that are lined up here didn't share on Friday or Monday, because then your share day will be tomorrow. So, Reva G., if you're lined up with that, I have you down.
Audrey M.P.
Stephen G.
Audrey M.P.
Carol
Stephen
S.
G. Carol S.F. What did
Sam
you say?
Sam. S like Sam.
S like Sam. Carol S. Okay. And I have one more spot. Maybe we got y'all. Let's go with this four. This five. Yeah, this four here. So we got Reba, Audrey, Stephen, and Carol. So that would be great. Let's start off with Reba. You got your three now, madam.
Okay. This is Reba Golden in Brooklyn. Sorry, I slipped on that. But when it comes to this kind of thing, I have there was a time when I think an inventory, a spontaneous inventory occurred to me. And that was, I just kind of took an inventory of my brain and my hand. And I asked myself, was there any other being in this world that had lied to me and misguided me as much as my brain had. And nothing in the world and nobody had done anything to me like I had done to me. And there was nothing, it was not just the food I was eating, it was the actions I was taking. I stepped off the curb without looking to see if the cars were coming. I rode a bicycle into an intersection going downhill and slammed myself into the side of an oncoming car. I was yelling at people. I couldn't get along. My life was a mess. It wasn't just the food. It was everything. My hand was doing things to me that nobody's hand could do worse. I was telling myself to do things that was nobody could advise me more badly than I could. I do not believe myself. I do my best to discredit myself. And when I have very strong feelings about what I should do, that's when I know I absolutely should not do them. I really pray to God, and I thank God from the bottom of my heart for getting me to see that my worst enemy was me. Thank you, God. I'm done.
Well, thank you so much, Reba G. We got Audrey MP now, and then Stephen G will follow you.
Good morning. I'm Audrey. I'm a compulsive overeater and a recovered bulimic. Thank you, Team Tuesday and Melanie. I'm going to unpack this paragraph. It says a lot to me, and I thank everybody for their shares. I hear some familiar voices. When it says that they worked a period of months on some problem or business deal, which is to be settled on a certain date, this reminds me of when I was really using, food and bulimia to manage my weight and sex and pills. I remember that I had like my prom or a certain date, and I would buy a certain dress. If any of you women know that, you know, the motivation was to get into the dress. That was the business deal, get into the dress, and that'll make me a better person at this event. And then, you know, and the minute I got the dress or set the goal, with the intention of losing weight and dieting, oh my God, like, you know, a week before or 3 days before, I try on the dress and it like wouldn't zip or button. I was eating to overcome a craving, and getting in the dress was beyond my mental control. Getting in the dress, the business deal, and it was all, you know, I disappointed myself time and time again. And so in my recovery, it's a little different. I have notes. I did the 12 steps with my sponsor, God bless her soul. When I got to step 12, she let me go, and I went out. I went out on Tic Tacs, Tic Tac gum. I don't eat gum. I don't eat Tic Tac gum. And, you know, I did a 10th step with someone, and they said, honey, you don't have a problem with food. You have a problem with your emotions. And my emotions are beyond my mental control, which is why I need to work this program more rigorously. I need to be more honest. To those familiar voices, I need to work. I love this vision format. I love getting to the place of doing my 10th step. The train isn't necessarily for me, but I want to pick and choose and trust who I give my stuff to. I've learned that in my recovery, and, you know, and the phenomenon of craving, I think my time's up, but I want to, I don't know how much time I have, but I had a social distancing little dinner party on my deck the other night, and we ordered in something with the cauliflower crust, and I ate my portion. And There were pieces left, and he said, honey, I don't want to be carting around pizza. Just leave it in, leave it and have some control. He said that to me.
Time.
And I passed.
I'm sorry about that. I should have warned you a little bit sooner so you could finish your story. Save it. We'll see you in 3 days. Thank you, Audrey. Audrey MP. Stephen G., you're next. And then Carol S. or F. We're going to get that right. You're going to help me with that, Carol, when you come up. Hi, Stephen. Your three starts now.
Hi. Good morning. I'm Stephen G. I'm a recovered compulsive overeater in Toronto, Canada. Grateful to be here. Thanks for your service. This book is set out in such a brilliant fashion. And the first part of the book is really just to set the foundation for what comes next. And what we have here with Silkwork, this is a non-alcoholic, detached scientific observer. And the prevailing attitude of the day in the general public, and I'm sure also in the scientific and medical community, were that alcoholics just did not have the willpower. You know, they should be able to stop, they just don't want to. And so Silkwork, I'm sure, came into his profession with that prevailing attitude. And he sees over and over and over and over these people who have every reason not to drink, every reason to not go on a binge, but they keep doing it at the most inopportune times. And he starts to question that prevailing belief. And he starts to get an understanding of this mental obsession and this allergy of the body. And he comes to the conclusion that these people are doomed. And he also comes to the conclusion for himself that he's completely powerless to help them. So they're beyond human aid. And it's necessary for me to understand that. And it comes with a bit more power, I think, if you will, power with a small p, that it's coming from this non-alcoholic scientific observer who's seeing it over and over and over and over. And it fits with what I've seen in my own life. You know, I'd have reason to not binge before a sports tournament playing a sport that I love. I've had reason not to binge before a social event with people that I like. And what I've come to realize is that my problem is spiritual. And what blocks me off from a spiritual experience is this self-focus. And whenever these things were happening, important events, I would get more into self. And I had no mechanism like a step 10 now or step 4 through 9 to get rid of those things. And so Silkworth is basically telling me I am doomed. And it took me years within OA until I came into vision to fully grasp that. And once I realized I was doomed, then I put down my armor. I put down all the other tools I was using, which weren't working. And I said, okay, what do I do now? And that's what the rest of the book is about. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Stephen G. Carol, you're up next. And then it looks like we will have time for one more to share. Carol, tell me so I can get it correct, please. The last initial?
S like Sam.
S like Sam. Okay, good. Thank you so much.
Okay.
Your 3 minutes will start right now.
Okay. I'm Carol S. from Monmouth Beach, New Jersey. And this is my first time that I'm speaking on a vision for you, although I've been coming to the meeting daily for 3 months. So I'm very happy to be here, and I'm very happy for all your service. What I wanted to share on was the phenomenon of craving and the mental obsession. The phenomenon of craving was so overwhelming before I got abstinent, before I came into program, that it was 24/7. I would get up to go to the bathroom in the middle of the night and think, I need cheese or I need peanut butter. It didn't matter what it was, and I'd have to go in the kitchen and eat it. And then I'd go back to bed. And I'd get up in the morning and I'd see these crumbs or the paper plate or wrappers. And I'd think, who did that? Because I don't remember eating in the middle of the night because the craving was so intense. I had no control over it whatsoever. It was horrible. So now I'm in program and I was absent for about 8 years. I lost my abstinence for 1. And now I've been absent for 3 months, totally. You know, no problem. No problems. Yes, I have problems, but no slips of any kind. And I don't have cravings anymore. And what a relief that is. I am so free from the food. I am shocked that God was able to do this for me because I never could do it for myself. Even when I was abstinent the first time, there were many days I was white-knuckling it. And this past week, I've had 2 very stressful emotional days. And I realized when they were over that my first thought was to turn to God for help. My first thought was not to go to the refrigerator. It never occurred to me to go to the refrigerator. And I attribute that to a vision for you because I keep hearing food is not an option. Food is not the problem. Food is not the solution. And I keep hearing that. And I think it finally got in my head. So the mental obsession that I used to have I don't have today, thank you, God. And I just, it's amazing for me. It really is. It's amazing how my higher power works for me no matter what, as long as I reach out. And I spend a lot of time in meditation and prayer during the day, and I go to a lot of these meetings, and I love them. And I think I'm really finally starting to absorb and to have it be internalized that I turn to God first, not second. So how many times in the past have I got into the kitchen and eaten and then said, oh, God, I should have asked you first. So thank you for letting me share, and I'm very happy to be here. I pass.
Thank you very much. Looks like the time's going to allow for at least one more person to share. If you press star one and give me the first name and the first initial of your last name.
Mary B.
You got Mary it, B. Mary B. You're on for three.
Thank you, Mel. Right by the head of the chinny chin chin. Mary B., grateful, recovered, compulsive overeater here in Phoenix, Arizona. You know, I don't know about the rest of you folks, but I can't listen to this meeting without it bringing tears to my eyes. You know, I was one of those crazy, out of her mind, couldn't live without the next binge, the next bite. Was in OA for 34 years of chronic relapse, was fighting the program, fighting the steps, fighting the sponsor, fighting the higher power, fighting the food plan, you know, because I wanted to have it my way. That's what I wanted. I wanted my way. And my way never, never, never worked. Still doesn't work. Well, with much gratitude, love, and everything else in my heart, because I love a vision for you. It has changed my life. Today I'm celebrating 3 years, 2 months, and 18 days of abstinence and a life I never dreamed possible. I have met so many wonderful people on a vision for you, on outreaches, calling newcomers, sponsors, people that share on the line.
Oh, Mary, please come back again.
Did you lose me, Mel? Did you lose me?
Just a moment there. Yeah, just a moment, but you still have time taken, so go ahead.
I'm so sorry.
You still have a minute.
Okay, thank you, Mel. And thank you. I love you all. Please continue this journey with me. Please take my hand because you've got my hand in yours. And we're taking this journey with that big higher power in the sky. God bless you all. Thank you, Mel, for hearing my voice and letting me share today and be a part of a miracle. I'm a living miracle, and so are you. Thanks. That's all I got, Mel. I pass.
That was dynamite. Thanks so much, all I got. Thank you. And that will take us to the close of our meeting this morning. So what I'm looking at guiding you to do is stick with us for the last 10 minutes. We're going to have a bit of a whirlwind transition to the unrecorded portion after we close this particular meeting up. And I'd like to ask Laura R. to please read from page 164, a book is meant to be suggestive only, and then we'll follow that up with the Serenity Prayer together as we transition to the last piece of this big book study. Good morning, Laura.
Good morning, Melanie. Thank you so much. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is a great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.